cripples, you know. They hit on the young ones. And they, you know, and they ain't worked, and God knows. And they said, my God, get that out of here. It'll ruin our reputation. Yeah, we don't need that in here. And Barry said, but it wants to stop drinking. We don't care what it wants. Throw it out. So Barry said it wants to stop. Well, two of them got up and picked up it and went to the door and opened and threw it out. Closed door. Well, in those days, as I said, they'd call Bill. Barry called Bill and said, you better get down here at the clubhouse. Bill said, what's the deal? Barry said, Doc, it's too important. Come down. So Bill got in the cab, and he came down. He's coming through the door, and he looked at Barry, and he pointed at him. He said, what's that? And Barry said, that's the problem. Bill said, well, what's the deal? Barry explained to him how the police brought him in and et cetera. And Bill said, did you ask it if it wanted to stop drinking alcohol? And Barry says, two times. But Bill, he's not only on alcohol, but he's been on all them other things. The needle, pills, marijuana, everything. Barry, we're not interested in that. I'm going to ask you one more time. Did you ask him if he wanted to stop drinking? And he said, yes, more than anything else in the world. And then Bill asked him this question. Barry, do you feel that he may mean business? Barry says, yes, I do. Bill said, that's all we need to hear, and that's all we need to know. And Bill went to the door and picked it up and took him over to the table where they were playing dominoes, and he says, boys, I want you to meet the newest member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He needs you, and you need him. And that tells the whole story right there. Now, if you read problems other than alcohol, where it talks about members who have made remarkable recoveries from both the bottle and the needle. They're talking about members like that. Now, from the time he sat down at that table and he passed away in 1984, he never took a drink. And that was in the middle 40s. Now, the reason he was in that rig, in order to support money for it, he was an excellent dancer, and he was light-skinned, and he was in a Broadway musical play, and he'd get drunk during intermission and get drunk, and the last time he just wandered around for his protection, they not only threw him in jail, but they also brought him to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, let's ask ourselves one question. If that particular human being would have been thrown out because of his looks, because of what they thought was his lifestyle, they really didn't know, or anything else, where would all the alcoholics that are sober today that he sponsored, who in turn sponsored, where would they be today? Where would they be today? No, we cannot turn anyone down. The individual has to determine, yes, I want what you have, and I'm willing to go to any lengths to get it. Yes, I'm one. Now, what do we have? Since we have no cure for alcoholism, what do we have? We have a way of life. And the way of life comes about as a recovery from what? A spiritual illness. And in order to recover as an alcoholic from a spiritual illness, in order to live the free, fun AA way of life, we stop drinking one day at a time in order to enjoy it. And all we have, as our book says, is a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And it's our maintenance of our spiritual condition that forbids us to drink one day at a time. And also gives us the freedom to live one day at a time. And tradition 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Now, a member who does any amount of traveling finds the AA spirit much the same almost everywhere. But apart from this inward kinship, there's vast differences among groups. A traveler may find two or three or four members of AA discussing the steps under a tree or in somebody's living room or in an office. In other parts of the country, you may find 300, 500 listening to a talker in an A meeting in a hall or an auditorium, you know. In some parts of this country and others, respectful silence greets the speaker who begins, "Hi, everybody, my name is David Ed, I'm an alcoholic." And another, everybody happily answers back. And in some areas, they use their full names. There are one-hour meetings, there are hour-and-a-half meetings, there are three-hour meetings, there's 11 o'clock at night meetings, there's incense-burning meetings, there's candlelight meetings, there's barefoot meetings, and in every section in every country in the world, the local group is free to work out its customs. Yeah. And as a result, this is a tremendous thing. It was a lot of play. I know that when I was a delegate to the General Service Conference, and it happened to be the Wednesday night was a free night, and it happened to be my 10th AA birthday, and so we all went to the Murray Hill group, and which it, because they had moved the conference, and we were down there they wasn't at the Roosevelt, and they forgot to make arrangements the previous year, and we were down at the Statler. And as a result, we went over to the Murray Hill group, and it had a lot of people there, you know, and a bunch of the delegates from, Arkansas and Tennessee and Mississippi and Alabama. They called us the Bible Belt bunch up there at the General Service Conference, and we all went. And so we went to the meeting, and you know, and the speaker got up, and he said, "My name is Joe," and we hollered back, "Hi, Joe," and in those days in the East, they didn't do that. And my God, they thought that the world had come to an end. There must have been 100 wet drunks in that place, you know what I mean? And they didn't do that. And you have to remember about those people up in the Northeast. They're not cold, it's just defects of character, that's all. And so as a result, that spread too. But you'd be surprised, you're talking about the autonomy of groups. 46% of our membership resides outside the continental limits of North America. And out of that is United States and Canada. And out of that 46%, 98%, they open every meeting with a serenity prayer and they close the meeting with a serenity prayer. They don't say the Lord's Prayer. And you know, you don't dare reach out and touch a Muslim in an AA meeting. I have news for you. And I've been in a lot of AA groups in this country, and if you wear a watch and a ring, and when it's over and you hold hands before you leave the meeting, you better check see if your watch and ring is still there. And they don't do it, you know. And so until one moves around, you find that the kinship and the spirit is the same, but actually there's a little differences in it, you see. And you know, I know in the group I came in, I thought the oldest sober member was Bill Wilson, and AA started in that group until I found out that AA was everywhere. AA was everywhere. And you know, you're talking about that, you know, just to show you. We like to brag, you know, about how many people we got in AA. El Salvador, a little country, that's fourth the geographical size of the state of Washington, has over 42,000 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Guatemala, 28 to 30. Costa Rica, in the 30 range. Oh, yes. Yes. You know where they hold the national AA convention in Mexico? They hold it in the bullfight arena. That's a good place to hold an AA convention. They had more at their international convention this past time than we had in Denver and in New Orleans combined. Our total attendance. Yeah. It's very, very prolific. Very prolific. And they are very enthusiastic about AA. And so as our individual group and group developments progress, we obey the tradition for other reasons. We obey them because they're not only right for us, we obey them because we really want to for ourselves. And so after all, and you may wonder, well, how can AA function under such seeming anarchy? Other societies have to have law and enforcement and sanctions and punishment administered by authorized people. Thank God and happily for us, we do not need that. In AA, we've got two authorities. Alcoholism, we understand him, and God as we understand him, and one heals and one kills. God, our Father, says, here's our will, live it. And alcohol says, if you don't take and use and live God's will, I'll kill you. And sometimes he does. So in AA, there is love enough, and there is punishment enough, without human authority putting their hands on the handles of power. And that is perhaps one of the prime cruxes why AA works. Why AA works. Because an alcoholic will resist human authority. We can be led, we can be encouraged, but we don't like to be threatened, nor we like to be forced. And Bill got this many, many years ago, in the really early days of AA. And he'd write to groups, and they'd write back and said, Bill, we will do anything for you and for Alcoholics Anonymous, but don't give us a government. And up to now, it certainly hadn't. Why don't we take just a little break, and then just for a few moments, and then we'll finish up and we can get out of here by 12, okay? Thank you very, very much.
But before you leave, just a minute. Before you leave for the break, we don't get started, we won't get started. So we're here to go, and David's here with bringing in, completing the rest of the traditions for us today.
Thank you, Collette. Tradition 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Every one of us, and newcomers, and some of us that have been around for a while, have to learn the hard way that this business of staying sober must have top priority. If we fail at that, then we cannot succeed at anything at all. And so the fifth tradition just simply reminds us, as a result of bitter experience, that groups should remember their primary purpose. The first tradition tells us exactly what our common welfare is. The second tradition tells us who is the boss. The third tradition knocks off all requirements and rules and regulations for membership. The fourth tradition allows the group to be an AA group or face the penalty. And then it aims towards the only reason that we're in business, and that's tradition 5. And then tradition 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 just maintain tradition 5 for us, if we'll just let it. And very often, unthinking enthusiasm puts a group off the main track. To give you an example, one group offered expanded AA programs, in other words, including helping newcomers to find jobs. I've been in a lot of AA groups where they meet on more than one meeting a week. Maybe they'll meet three or four or five or six times, or wherever it is, and the facility or something, and you look up at the bulletin board and you can't find out when they meet. They've got every kind of sign up there, God Almighty, bake sale, raffles, everything in this God's world, you know. Babysitting won't, and all this and all that. Now, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, the group is not an employment agency. It's not a jail getting in agency. It's not a housing bureau. It's not a marriage counseling, legal counseling, banking counseling. And now, there's nothing wrong about one member telling another member about a good job, but when the group turns itself into an employment agency, the individual gets confused about the primary purpose of a group. AA's function is to help that alcoholic maintain sobriety after they get sober, and that alcoholic can go get himself a job or he can quit a job. AA's not interested in whether I'm working or not. That's what's my attitude. Now, using discretion, a member may lend a few dollars needed for a meal or a room, or even invite a broke alcoholic to be a temporary guest in your home. You've never lived until you've invited an alcoholic to be a temporary guest in your home and they stay a year, you know. Oh, yeah. And when even acting on our own, an individual member of Alcoholics Anonymous should not be an AA layman. or an A.A. layman, rather, shouldn't award himself an honorary or herself an honorary medical degree and hand out diagnosis and prescriptions for other people's sicknesses. Now, because this exact failing is so common in AA today, the AA group in all of its dealings should be extra careful to emphasize that it is not invading the medical field. Only through the personal stories of its members can we tell anyone how we have recovered in AA, period. Our own personal experiments. And that's only clarifies, as I said, one message. How an alcoholic recovers in AA, that's all, period. In the group in which I'm a member, a gal was committed suicide as a result of being in a closed discussion meeting to where she had just had extensive brain surgery and had been in intensive care. And only by God's grace was she alive, but for the rest of her life she had to be on Dilantin and a mild doses of phenobarbital. And it was one of those nights that we're in a closed discussion meeting to where everybody's an expert about everything and don't know nothing about nothing. And the topic for the discussion at that meeting was, are you really sober if you're taking medication? When it got around to her, she explained that because of her traumatic brain massive injury, that she was a subject to convulsions and seizures for the rest of her life. And in order to minimize the chances for convulsions and seizures, she had to be on Dilantin and mild doses of phenobarbital, which is a standard medication for epilepsy or for seizures or convulsions. The minute she said phenobarbital, three members of AA, one sober 5, one sober 3, one sober a little better than a year, they jumped up and they took every inch of hide off of that gal. They said, you're not sober, you're taking dope. And not knowing any different, thinking she's going to be thrown out of Alcoholics Anonymous. She was not abusing it. She was going just according, because the program gave her the strength not to abuse it. To just go along, she had to take it because of her physician's instructions. And thinking that she would be thrown out of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's another side story that time will not permit. She went home and she flushed all of her prescribed medication, which she was not abusing, down the commode. 3 weeks later, she had a convulsion and a seizure, the kind that salt water won't stop, honey and milk won't stop, Gatorade and honey won't stop, and she died. And coming back from the graveside services, the one that was 5 years sober asked me, he said, where did we go wrong? And I just simply quoted word for word from our illustrated pamphlet on our traditions, and the fifth tradition, that our members are qualified to carry only one message, how an alcoholic can recover in AA. That's all, period. Neither one of the three were epileptic. Neither one of the three had ever been subjected to seizures or convulsions. And you remember when I started, I said that as a result of our experience, we were asked to share our experiences, not our opinions. And these were opinions. And I also said that opinions in many instances have a tendency to make sick people sicker and to physically kill people. They were given their opinion. I heard this, I heard that. Not sharing an actual experience. You know, in AA, we love to get up and we love to brag about how many lives we're saving. Oh, we like to get up and tell how many lives we're saving. We don't dare get up and talk about how many we've killed. With false information, opinions, I heard this, could be, yeah. You know, in AA, we have a lot of doctors in AA, but thank God we don't have but one opinion. I mean, one physician. Now, this is not an isolated case. It's happening right this second all over in Alcoholics Anonymous, all over the world. Getting this kind of information and getting advice and messing into people's business. Trying to get psychotic people who need professional help after they get physically sober. Members of AA who are psychotic and who have a program to be honest and share with professional help. Saying, you don't need that. You know? And we're opening the door for suicides for a lot of our people. And don't kid yourself, some of them are taking advantage of it. It's happening right now all over AA. And so the group, if the group sticks with recovery, it's not going to have any problems. Tradition 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. That's problems of property, money, and prestige, diverses from our primary purpose. The related facility may be an outside agency combating alcoholism or an enterprise that individual AAs and collectives want to start. And it was the latter, enterprises that AAs wanted to start that most confronted our young fellowship. And you know, even today, it still confronts our fellowship with all the tax-free money, grant money, and other monies that are available, trust monies that are available today. Back when the Hughes-Javits bill first came in, little drunks were emptying out about 18, 19 years ago, and you'd run on them, you'd see them on the street, and you say, I haven't seen you in any AA meeting. Oh, David, I'm a 7. What's a 7? Well, that's a government pay scale. Oh, you are? Yeah, David, all my life, that's all I've ever wanted to be is an alcoholism counselor. And I said, well, what, you're sober 3 years? Took you 20 years to admit that you were an alcoholic? Yet all your life, that's all you ever wanted to be is an alcoholism counselor. And a lot of them, unfortunately, returned to drinking, and some fortunately didn't. And a lot of ambitious centers have done, you know, and we've got a lot of them. They farm halfway houses, successful. We got more halfway houses, 3/4-inch houses, 7/18-inch houses, 1/4-inch houses than you can shake a stick at in our company today, you know. And towards outside agencies dealing with alcoholism, our policy in AA is cooperation but not affiliation. A group cooperates by welcoming referrals from treatment modalities, hospitals, correctional facilities, or by sponsoring AA meeting-type meetings in institutions. But in one area, money for a rehabilitation was solicited at an AA meeting, implying affiliation. It certainly was. In another area of the country, AA was listed among the beneficiaries of a United Fund drive. That's certainly a violation, not cooperation. AA members employed by outside agencies wear 2 hats, but Tradition 6 cautions each member against wearing both hats at the same time. It's impossible for an alcoholic to wear 2 hats at the same time. It's real simple. We haven't got but one head. Now, on the job, he or she may be an alcoholism counselor, but in AA, there's no such thing as an alcoholism counselor. There's no such thing in AA, there's no such thing as a counselor. There's no such thing as a housewife. There's no such thing as a bum. There's no such thing as an AA dentist or an AA lawyer or an AA judge or an AA teacher or an AA unemployed, AA retired. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't got one kind of AA, and that's a member. And what we do on the outside, that's our business. But in here, we're all the same. We're all equals and society equals, and we're members. And so therefore, on the job, whoever's working the field of alcoholism, yeah, they are a counselor, but not at meetings. At meetings, he or she is just another member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so today, we understand the paradox that the more AA sticks to its business, primary business, the better every one of us will be, the better the group can function. And this is one of the things that's so difficult for members of AA. You know, they find their utopia, but the problem in AA relies today in the fact of if the sponsorship is effective, then the chances of the group staying in AA group and giving the drunks the best shot will always be the solution, nothing more, nothing less. And Tradition 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. There is no tradition in Alcoholics Anonymous that's taken a bigger beating than Tradition 7. And this is the reason this tradition was written, so that outside monies could not dictate or influence what AA should do. And we found that out through the old Alcoholic Foundation, believe it or not, and before our General Service Conference was started. And we have to be practical. A group can hardly hold its regular meeting on a street corner, and an empty basket will not fill a coffee pot. And as soon as we become active in AA, we learn there are many other expenses involved in making meetings effective. Then our horizons broaden. What about that central office or inner group that so many of us call for help? Phone companies do not give free service. They are so thankful that we are sober, and we're not trying to call some bootlegger, penguin bootlegger in the South Pole, to dig up the Ayatollah and tell him how much we love him long distance, you know. Now, the phone company, I have a tremendous relationship with the phone company. They have let me know that as long as I pay my bill, they'll continue the service, and if I don't pay them, they'll turn it off. That's how simple it is. Now, beyond our own locality, we learn about AA's General Service Office and the work it does for groups every place, everywhere. AA activity is self-supporting, or it ought to be, at all levels, and in every case, the responsibility comes right back to us, because as individual members, because we are Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes when we're new, our contributions rattle rather than rustle. There are very, very few groups today who pass around empty coffee cans, you know. And you pass around, somebody puts a dollar in it, goes down real silently, and somebody puts a quarter and goes plunk, and everybody looks around and all this kind of stuff, you know. And the first members of AA were in the same fix, and it seemed they needed some outside help than the modest gifts that were coming in. And their plans called for big-shot ideas of philanthropy. But as one of the greatest non-alcoholic friends that AA will ever have, John D. Rockefeller, Jr., said, you know, I'm afraid money's going to spoil this thing. And a few AAs had already come to the same conclusion, and gradually the minority became the majority, as our experience has shown us, that us members ourselves can provide enough to finance AA's proper aim. In its simplest application, Tradition 7 is easily understood when we hear about a group that's being started with funds from a federal grant. Our quick reaction is that somebody goofed, and they certainly did. Then we come to the borderline cases, groups that put on a raffle for the benefit of their central office or for their depleted treasury, and invite the general public to contribute or to buy tickets, have weekly bingo games and invite the general public to participate, have public dances and invite the public to participate, get wanting free ads in the hometown newspaper. Yeah. Now, these projects are routine for any other society, but for us, such actions mean that we've got our hand out again asking non-members for money. And often, of course, we do not have to ask. And money may pose a difficult problem, another problem, if a group treasury grows too fat beyond a sensible reserve. But there is a simple solution that strengthens our unity and advances our purpose, and give the excesses to AA's activities and services. So when our trustees declared for the principle that AA must always stay poor, for the principle of corporate poverty was firmly and finally embedded in AA's principles, when newspaper and other news media got hold of these facts, there was an immediate and profound reaction. To people who are familiar with countless drives for funds and charitable funds, AA presented a strange thing, approving editorials not only in this country but abroad, generated a new wave of confidence and respect in the what? In the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous. For they pointed out that the irresponsible had become responsible by making financial independence part of its principal traditions. Tradition 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. And spiritual as it is, AA remains very much of this world. The eighth tradition, like the seventh, focuses on that vulgar five-letter word that's not mentioned in either tradition. That word is money. How many of us had to explain to some cynical prospect, no, I'm not a social worker. I do not get paid for sitting with you and talking with you or staying with you while you shake out a drunk. We do this because it is one of the best ways for us to stay sober ourselves. However, this does not mean, of course, that the idea of turning professional has never entered an AA's mind. In the lean years, our co-founder, Bill, he thought about becoming a lay therapist to help alcoholics as a result of his experience in helping alcoholics. But with a strong push from the group conscience, he went to the group and told him what he was doing. And they said, Bill, if you do it, then the rest of them are do it. You're the head horse. And if that happens, there'll be no time for a regular AA meeting. Everybody wants money to work with a drunk. Where's the drunk going to go? You yourself said we shouldn't do this. And so Bill got a strong push from the group conscience. And then he realized that he couldn't hang out a sign, Bill Wilson, faith healer at $10 an hour. But questions arose as our fellowship grew. And, you know, in the early days, the central offices, they had volunteers. But today, our offices are so big and so productive and so busy that full-time help and employers are needed. And in these office jobs, and they're paid decent wages in order to get the thing that world done. And this is what the eighth tradition is all about. And you know, after all, and it takes a long time to get our literature, to see that our literature is accurate, that it doesn't express somebody's individual opinion, that it always expresses the collective experience and the group conscience of Alcoholics Anonymous. And some of our pamphlets take 2 and 3 years just to get the cover right, just to get the color right, so that it will appeal to the majority members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, wait a minute, some old-timer or somebody may interrupt. What's going on here? Did Dr. Bob say, let's keep it simple? Let's don't louse it up with Freudian concepts that appeal to the scientific mind? And that's the precise reason about keeping it simple. You betcha. Unfortunately, there are too many of our literature racks in our groups are cluttered up with non-AA literature. And this is what Dr. Bob meant, I believe, that let's keep it simple and let's don't louse it up with Freudian concepts that appeal to the scientific mind. Tradition 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service centers. Service boards are committees directly responsible to those they serve. This is one of the greatest traditions for an AA group. This allows a group to go ahead and to elect or to appoint service committees for the group, but only directly responsible to the members of that group. Now, the word, let's keep it simple, were the last words that our co-founder Bill heard from his fellow co-founder, Dr. Bob, shortly before Dr. Bob's death in 1950. And aware that the word it meant our recovery program, Bill later wrote, we need to distinguish sharply between spiritual simplicity and functional simplicity. But when we get into questions of actions of groups and as a whole, we find that we must, to some degree, extent, organize or to carry the message, or else face confusion. And confusion is not simplicity. And so if everybody understands in a group that, in other words, that somebody else is going to make the coffee, somebody else is going to turn on the lights, somebody else is going to get up the program, somebody else is going to pay the rent, somebody else is going to buy the literature, what happened? What's the result? No coffee, no answering the phone, no programs, no literature, no bills paid. So in order to avoid such a disaster, one or more members in smaller groups volunteer to be responsible for getting the coffee ready and opening up the meeting place, or in the larger groups, they are elected. And what are they doing? They're only responsible to the members that they serve. All through Alcoholics Anonymous, our trusted servants are there only in servitude, and certainly not in authority. And condition 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. We know and we believe that the future of Alcoholics Anonymous greatly depends upon the Tradition 10, AA's principle of no controversy at the public level. And since AA has begun, AA has never been divided by a major controversial issue. Because by some deep instinct, we have known from the very beginning that no matter what the provocation, Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole must never publicly take sides as AA, and even in any fight, even a worthy one. Now, as individual members, we can do whatever we want to. We can vote on issues of our time, on politics, but it is suggested and requested that as individuals, we do not use our name in conjunction and connection with the two words, Alcoholics Anonymous. The Washingtonian Society, a movement among alcoholics, was started in Baltimore over a century and three quarters ago, almost found the answer. At first, they were composed entirely of alcoholics, carrying the message to another. But they got involved in the slavery issue. Had they stuck to their primary purpose, they would have found it eventually. But no, they didn't. And they got into the slavery issue. Some became temperance crusaders. They allowed non-alcoholics to come in and use society for their own purpose. And within a few short years, they had completely lost their effectiveness in helping alcoholics, and the society collapsed. When the Washingtonian movement was 2 years old, they had over 500,000 members, 500,000 members. When I got sober in April of 1967, at that time, sober in AA, or members of AA, they estimated that they're only in North America about 380,000. And AA was 32 years old then. 32 years old. Of course, doesn't count the hundreds of thousands that have come into AA prior to that 67 that stayed sober and died sober. But they had almost found it. And that's the reason why AA is still here. As much as some of our members and outside pressure want us to change it, put in our big book about it's better to take vitamins and all this kind of stuff and all that kind of stuff. No. AA is here so that David can stop drinking alcohol, and if David wants to take vitamins or David doesn't want to take, that's David's business and not Alcoholics Anonymous business. Period. You know? And so we're not incorporated as a legal instrument by which to attack anyone, no matter how severe the provocation. We believe that continuously, since our beginning and today, that AA is a fellowship and not an organization. Incorporation necessarily makes it an organization. We believe that a spiritual faith and a way of life cannot be incorporated, because AA can and will survive as long as it remains a spiritual faith and a way of life open to all men and women who suffer from alcoholism. Tradition 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. Now, there are not but three absolutes in AA. The absolute freedom from alcohol. The absolute freedom for any alcoholic to become a member of AA or leave AA, and absolute anonymity on the public media. Let's not confuse personal anonymity with anonymity breaks on the public media. The alcoholic who has and who's still recovering through our program is himself or herself still the strongest attraction AA has. When people are asked what led them to for AA help, the answer still today, more common over the today, is that an AA member, I don't know if you realize this or not, but 63% of our membership do not come from alcoholic homes. And still today, the biggest percentage that come to us today do not come from treatment modalities, although in some areas of the parts of the country, they're more prolific because they've got more treatment for dialysis. And I personally do not care how you get to A, whether they throw you in barbed wire or two buzzards bump head up in the air and you fall out or whatever you get here. It's what you want to do after you get here. Treatment facility lingo is not AA lingo. It's altogether different. Their job is to get you physically sober and pitch you in here where you can live sober. If they had a way to take the rest of your money, they'd figure out a plan or a program to live sober. That's correct. Thank God we need them and their proper perspective. But I'll tell you one thing, they need us more than we need them. Now run that around your head a little bit. Yeah, they need us because the success of their operation depends on their graduates who stay sober. And in AA, we're going to win some, you're going to lose some. And that's the way AA has always operated. AA only grows in proportion to the number of alcoholics that are uncovered. All we do with our literature, all we do with AA is widen the gates so that others can come in. Searching ways to where maybe in the dark corner there's someone, and a good example is what's happening right over here. Signing for Braille. For the hearing impaired, the visually impaired. Maybe they're going to put something on with a pacemaker for the brain impaired one of these days. I really don't know. But if there's a way, a drunk will figure it out to make money. He will, I'll tell you. Yeah. But you know what? I'll tell you what. We met, the reason our program works different than others and the fact that, you see, an alcoholic, he's wired backwards. His brain is in the rear end and the rear end is in his head. That's the precise reason we can't sit in a meeting more than an hour. We wear our brains out. And suppose a sick alcoholic doesn't have the good fortune to find us. How are they going to meet AA? How are they going to find us if we all remain in hiding, you know? Now, this tradition is talking about personal anonymity, remember? No alcoholic will be attended to AA, will be attracted to AA if he or she doesn't have, doesn't know that AA exists, or if he or she has a distorted, unfavorable impression of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the reason for our public information committees, to give the public an accurate picture of AA. And we have found by our experience that it's better to let our attraction rather than our attraction and let our friends recommend us rather than promotion. But Tradition 11 represents something more than a sound public relations policy. It is more a denial of self-seeking. It is certainly to where personal ambition has no place in AA. But it also implies that each member should become an active guardian of our fellowship in its relationship with the general public. Because as we have seen, anonymity is a protective coat that binds and covers our whole fellowship and our whole society. But it is more than just protection. It has another dimension, a spiritual significance, and this leads us to Tradition 12. Tradition 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Let us always remember that anonymity, not taking credit for our own or any of other alcoholics' sobriety or recovery, is humility at work. You see, if I'm going to have to take credit for getting a drunk sober, then I have to take the credit if they get drunk again. Anonymity, as we observe it in AA, is at root a very simple expression of humility. When we use the 12 steps to recover from alcoholism, what are we doing? We're trying to achieve real humility, to put our self-respect,
on a solid base of truth rather than fantasies and fictions about ourselves. When we use the 12 traditions to work together in AA, we're all trying to achieve real humility as individual members by recognizing our true place in AA as a fellowship and by recognizing AA's true place in the world. And we don't want to sell our program as a surefire remedy or as an extravagant circus identifying only the noted people. And when we're given
gal that talked last night has got more class and more knowledge and more experience, and you've never seen her full-face picture on television or any newspaper articles in anyone. And who do you see? People who want to use AA's name and AA's credibility so that you'll buy their books and their records again and everything else. And you notice on those talk shows, they never ask them, well, what is AA? And the reason they don't ask them, because they don't know what AA is. They can't give you an answer. That's the reason why they don't ask them those things. Now, if you want a real celebrity in AA, you heard one and you met one last night. Now, that's a real celebrity in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sober 47 years, 84 years of age, Natalie, and her mind is just as sharp as a tack. And you know why? Because she goes to AA meetings every day. And she works with the gals. And she works with drunks. 84 years of age, sober 47 years. Yeah. And had a tough time getting there. It is members like that, and we've got herds of them. Snuggle up to them. Begin to feel the gratitude and what they went through so we, with our great egos and our selfishness, self-centeredness, think that we can change it and make it more glamorous and make it easier for others to come. Yeah. And so, actually, so Tradition 12 reminds us we have something stronger than our personal, than our own human personalities to fall back on. Our principles come first, and they are not our own invention. They reflect eternal spiritual values, and with this tradition, both as individuals and as a fellowship, we humbly acknowledge our dependence on a power greater than ourselves. I want to thank this committee, and I want to thank for allowing this alcoholic to share this alcoholic's experience and to be here with you wonderful people. And I want to thank you for your attention and for your attendance. This has been a very, very wonderful weekend for this human being to be allowed to share his experiences and his strengths and his hopes and his futures and his fears and his joys with you. And all I wish for each and every one of you, and that is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you so much. House cripples, you know, they hit on the young. And they, you know, and they ain't worked, and God knows. And they said, my God, get that out of here. It'll ruin our reputation. Yeah, we don't need that in here. And Barry said, but it wants to stop drinking. We don't care what it wants. Throw it out. So Barry said it wants to stop. Well, two of them got up and picked up it and went to the door and opened and threw it out. Closed door. Well, in those days, as I said, they'd call Bill. Barry called Bill and said, you better get down here at the clubhouse. Bill said, what's the deal? Barry said, ah, it's too important. Come down. So Bill got in the cab, and he came down. He's coming through the door, and he looked at Barry, and he pointed and said, what's that? And Barry said, that's the problem. Bill said, well, what's the deal? Barry explained to him how the police brought him in, and et cetera. And Bill said, did you ask it if it wanted to stop drinking alcohol? And Barry says, two times. But Bill, he's not only on alcohol, but he's been on all them other things. The needle, pills, marijuana, everything. Barry, we're not interested in that. I'm going to ask you one more time. Did you ask him if he wanted to stop drinking? And he said, yes, more than anything else in the world. And then Bill asked him this question. Barry, do you feel that he may mean business? Barry says, yes, I do. Bill said, that's all we need to hear, and that's all we need to know. And Bill went to the door and picked it up and took him over to the table where they were playing dominoes. And he says, boys, I want you to meet the newest member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He needs you, and you need him. And that tells the whole story right there. Now, if you read problems other than alcohol, where it talks about members who have made remarkable recoveries from both the bottle and the needle, they're talking about members like that. Now, from the time he sat down at that table and he passed away in 1984, he never took a drink. And that was in the middle 40s. Now, the reason he was in that rig, in order to support money for it, he was an excellent dancer. And he was light-skinned. And he was in a Broadway musical play, and he'd get drunk during intermission and get drunk. And the last time he just wandered around for his protection, they not only threw him in jail, but they also brought him to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, let's ask ourselves one question. If that particular human being would have been thrown out because of his looks, because of what they thought was his lifestyle, they really didn't know, or anything else, where would all the alcoholics that are sober today that he sponsored, who in turn sponsored, where would they be today? Where would they be today? No, we cannot turn anyone down. The individual has to determine, yes, I want what you have, and I'm willing to go to any lengths to get it. Yes, I'm one. Now, what do we have? Since we have no cure for alcoholism, what do we have? We have a way of life. And the way of life comes about as a recovery from what? A spiritual illness. And in order to recover as an alcoholic from a spiritual illness, in order to live the free, fun AA way of life, we stop drinking one day at a time in order to enjoy it. And all we have, as our book says, is a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And it's our maintenance of our spiritual condition that forbids us to drink one day at a time. And also gives us the freedom to live one day at a time. And tradition 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or as a whole. Now, a member who does any amount of traveling finds the AA spirit much the same almost everywhere. But apart from this inward kinship, there's vast differences among groups. A traveler may find two or three or four members of AA discussing the steps under a tree or in somebody's living room or in an office. In other parts of the country, you may find 300, 500 listening to a talker in an AA meeting in a hall or an auditorium, you know. In some parts of this country and others, respectful silence greets the speaker who begins, "Hi, everybody, my name is David A., and I'm an alcoholic." And another, everybody happily answers back. And in some areas, they use their full names. There are one-hour meetings, there are hour-and-a-half meetings, there are three-hour meetings, there's 11 o'clock at night meetings, there's incense-burning meetings, there's candlelight meetings, there's barefoot meetings. And in every section in every country in the world, the local group is free to work out its customs. Yeah. And as a result, this is a tremendous thing.
It was a lot of play. I know that when I was a delegate to the General Service Conference, and it happened to be the Wednesday night was a free night, and it happened to be my 10th A birthday, and so we all went to the Murray Hill group. And which, because they had moved the conference, and we were down there, they wasn't at the Roosevelt, and they forgot to make arrangements the previous year, and we were down at the Statler, and as a result, we went over to the Murray Hill group, and it had a lot of people there, you know, and a bunch of the delegates from Arkansas and Tennessee and Mississippi and Alabama. They call us the Bible Belt bunch up there at the General Service Conference, and we all went. And so we went to the meeting, and you know, and the speaker got up, and he said, "My name is Joe," and we hollered back, "Hi, Joe," and in those days in the East, they didn't do that. And my God, they thought that the world had come to an end. There must have been 100 wet drunks in that place, you know what I mean? And they didn't do that. And you have to remember about those people up in the Northeast. They're not cold. It's just defects of character, that's all. And so as a result, that spread too. But you'd be surprised. You're talking about the autonomy of groups. 46% of our membership resides outside the continental limits of North America. And out of that is United States and Canada. And out of that 46%, 98%, they open every meeting with a serenity prayer, and they close the meeting with a serenity prayer. They don't say the Lord's Prayer. And you know, you don't dare reach out and touch a Muslim in an AA meeting. I have news for you. And I've been in a lot of AA groups in this country, and if you wear a watch and a ring, and when it's over and you hold hands before you leave the meeting, you better check to see if your watch and ring is still there. And they don't do it, you know. And so until one moves around, you find that the kinship and the spirit is the same, but actually there's a little differences in it, you see. And you know, I know in the group I came in, I thought the oldest sober member was Bill Wilson, and AA started in that group. Until I found out that AA was everywhere. AA was everywhere. And you know, you're talking about that, you know, just to show you. We like to brag, you know, about how many people we got in El Salvador, a little country that's fourth the geographical size of the state of Washington, has over 42,000 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Guatemala, 28 to 30. Costa Rica, in the 30 range. Oh, yes. Yes. You know where they hold the national AA convention in Mexico? They hold it in the Bullfight Arena. That's a good place to hold an AA convention. They had more at their international convention this past time than we had in Denver and in New Orleans combined. Our total attendance. Yeah. Very, very prolific. Very prolific. And they are very enthusiastic about AA. And so as our individual group and group developments progress, we obey the tradition for other reasons. We obey them because they're not only right for us, we obey them because we really want to for ourselves. And so, after all, and you may wonder, well, how can AA function under such seeming anarchy? Other societies have to have law and enforcement and sanctions and punishment administered by authorized people. Thank God and happily for us, we do not need that. In AA, we've got two authorities. Alcohol as we understand him, and God as we understand him, and one heals and one kills. God, our Father, says, here's our will, live it. And alcohol says, if you don't take and use and live God's will, I'll kill you. And sometimes he does. So in AA, there is love enough, and there is punishment enough without human